Welcome to Necessary Conversations with Daryl M. Taliaferro. Conversations that are real, raw, and relevant. Let's get the conversation started now.
Hey, welcome to episode number 15 of Necessary Conversations. I'm so excited to have you on the journey today. In this episode, we're continuing the conversation entitled The Trauma Associated with the African American Experience. I'm joined again by Dr. John R. Faison. He's the senior pastor of the Watson Grove Baptist Church of Nashville, Tennessee. Let's get to it right now. You know, African Americans have always had to deal with various types of trauma. Yet we deal with this trauma in a myriad of ways, some healthy, some not so healthy. As a matter of fact, for so many African Americans, the various traumas have caused a heightened level of stress, anxiety, trepidation, and even fear. So much so that it has impacted our physical and emotional health, how we engage with others, and how we engage with ourselves. Dr. Faison, as we continue the conversation surrounding trauma, when we consider the idea of cause and effect, one of the effects of traumas associated with the African-American experience is feeling like we have to say yes to every opportunity that comes our way, or that we can't miss a moment because for some strange reason, we feel that this moment may just be our defining moment. We feel as if our value and worth is defined by every yes. In other words, there's a subconscious thought that says to us, we must say yes to every opportunity. We must be great at everything. And while that's admirable, it's just unrealistic. As a matter of fact, this line of thinking causes us to be a jack of all trades and a master of none. As a young leader, particularly in the African American community, how important is it to find and stay in your lane? How important is it to isolate your yes only to the things that you do well while saying no to the things that, you know, really don't interest you?
Coming up as a young preacher, leader, pastor, whatever you want to call it, man, you are really stretched by what you say yes to.
Very true.
When you're trying to figure out, trying to learn yourself and learn what works for you, learn where you fit, where's your lane. You really kind of say yes to everything. So you're governed by what you say yes to, trying to find what it is.
Right.
The older you get, man, and the further you get along in this, you get kind of established and you've realized there's some things about you that you do well,
right,
and some things about you that just don't fit you. Yeah. So the older you get and further you go along, now you're governed by what you say no to.
Yeah.
And I've learned, man, I got four areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Four areas that are my sweet spots,
yeah,
right? And so because I have a limited amount of time and there's kind of a demand now, right, some way, somehow it's happened. If it's outside of these four areas, I'm not your guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I might have interest in it. I might be excited about it,
right,
but I'm not your guy.
Yeah.
And those areas for me are preaching, leadership, family, and justice.
Yeah.
Those are my four sweet spots. It's like Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I'm a 90s kid, 80s baby, 90s kid.
Yeah.
I grew up watching Mike, man. When Mike was young, man, Mike would shoot from anywhere.
Yeah.
Mike would scour your head at any given moment.
Absolutely.
Well, the older he got, man, he couldn't do that no more. The knees couldn't take it. The ankles couldn't. The back,
yeah,
couldn't take it. So, man, Mike would just find his spot on the court,
yeah,
call for the ball, and do this fadeaway on,
yeah,
you.
Yeah.
And it was water, bottom, every time.
Every time.
And I don't care where he was on the floor.
Yeah.
He was going to find that spot, call for the ball, back you down,
right,
and brush your head wide open.
Absolutely.
Because that was his sweet spot. He understood. This is where I'm going to wear you out.
Yeah.
Court is large.
Yeah.
I can do everything on the court, but this is my sweet spot.
Right.
This is where I'm best at.
Yeah.
And man, I had to figure that out.
Yeah.
And once I drilled that down, it gave me the parameters from which to say no.
Yeah.
And no is a complete sentence.
It is.
Right? I don't have to explain it. I ain't got to justify it. No.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And man, that has saved my energy. It has saved my sanity. It has saved me time, and it has allowed me to be more effective in the sweet spots.
Sure.
Because my energy is not being siphoned off into other tertiary, cursory areas.
Yeah, that's good. You know, when you consider the trauma associated with the African American experience, sometimes that trauma can be both seen and felt in the workplace. I'll give you an example. When you consider the idea of hair, there are some hairstyles that are simply not allowed in the workplace. Let me take it a step further. Even if you take a moment and Google the words unprofessional hairstyles, the vast majority of photos you will see will be those of African-American women. You'll see photos of women who are wearing natural hairstyles such as braids, and twists, and afros. When you consider the idea of natural hairstyles, these are hairstyles that don't have chemicals in it. Yet when you Google the word professional hairstyles, you see a contrast. You see the vast majority of photos to include white men and white women. And even those few photos of African Americans that you see, their hair is straight or permed. The unfortunate reality is that many women who are natural or women who are thinking about going natural, not only is society saying so, but they too feel that their hair is unprofessional. Although, culturally, there's nothing wrong with wearing braids. There's nothing wrong with wearing twists. There's nothing wrong with wearing an afro. They feel that they have to conform to the status quo. They have reservations and they are apprehensive about wearing their natural hair to work because they have been conditioned to think that their natural hair isn't professional. And this is not just by whites in our society, but by family and friends and acquaintances and their significant others. Consequently, they have a choice. Either they're going to embrace the culture and be the source of conflict, or they're going to conform and climb. What would you say to individuals who feel that they are between a rock and a hard place when it comes to that?
That's a hard question, because I think each individual person has to decide when they make the choice between the two. There are seasons where in order to climb, you got to conform. Right. Then there are seasons when you're in charge, you've built your own thing, and now you get to decide that you can make things a bit easier for those who came behind you, as opposed to you having to make those difficult choices. Man, I remember I was in the military. I served as an officer in the Army from 2003 to about 2011. And man, during that time, natural hair for women in uniform was almost outlawed. It wasn't until recent years. Like I said, I've been out since 2011, and I know it was fairly recently that women were allowed to wear certain styles. And even men now, I think, can do cornrows and braids. I'm not sure. It's got, you know, it got certain length and regulations and all that kind of stuff. But man, those things were an option when I was in, because they were viewed as just as you described. Now, if you want to be a military officer in that environment, if that's your goal, then you kind of figure it out. Okay, I can't wear cornrows. Got it. But I want to become a lieutenant colonel. I want to become a colonel. I want to be a general. I want to be a sergeant major. You know, so you make those adjustments to climb. It just depends on how important it is to you. Is that what you need to do? Now, I'm out of the military. I can wear my hair how I want to wear my hair. All right. But I think people have to decide for themselves. I don't think there's a formula for that. We all know about taking L's until we can, you know, until we can get the W we want. I think that's part of that. I think individuals have to make those decisions for themselves. But when you get to a place where you can make those choices and you can make those decisions, I believe that in those moments, it may be time for you to create conditions that are better for those that come behind you. If you're starting a business, or if you run a company, you're a CEO, you're a C-suite level leader, and you get a chance now to make choices and to influence policy, you remember what that felt like. You remember what that was about and the kind of the tension and the choice that you had to make. Why not make those things better? By stepping out and saying, listen, you don't have to conform here. Here's what you got to do. As long as your performance is good, as long as we're operating from a level of respect and dignity and honor, and you're clean, right? You know, that kind of stuff. Then you can make those choices. But I think young leaders have to weigh what's more important for them. Because if you're going to navigate in this world and succeed, there are some moments where, you know, everybody doesn't start out balling. Everybody don't start out with six figures and seven and eight figures. You got to start somewhere. And if that means, you know, paying your dues, then that may be something you have to do until you can create the space where you can make other choices.
That's good. Okay, so what do you say to those who say, you got to watch it, though? Because if you're not careful, you can allow the love of your culture to prevent the longevity of your climb.
Well, you can. You can let the love for your culture prohibit the longevity of your climb. But that's a decision you got to make.
Yeah.
And when you make that decision, just be ready to accept the consequence. I mean, just understand that these are the parameters. And if I step outside of those, there's going to be consequences to it. Right. So my thing is, if you're going to make the choice to do that, then do it.
Yeah.
And take the L that comes with it.
Yeah. 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 If there be one.
Right. If there be one. But you can't do it and then get upset.
Yeah.
When there's heat, it's like, you know, I'm a protest, but then get upset about the possibility of being arrested.
Yeah.
Well, that's the cost of doing business when you protest.
That's right.
So I make that choice early in the game.
Yeah.
That this is what I'm going to do. And this is as far as I'm willing to go.
Yeah.
I just think you got to make that choice early. You got to decide that for yourself. And for some people, you know, I'd rather climb and fight that way.
Yeah.
For others, I'd rather fight on the ground and serve that way. I'm telling you, neither is wrong.
That's right.
You got to make the choice for you and then understand the consequences that come with those choices.
Yeah. That's good. So let's switch gears for a second. What do you say to parents who are raising children in 2020? These young people who are growing up and seeing all that they've seen on the news, in social media, those who are seeing racism firsthand. when we were growing up, we read racism in a book. But now the kids of this day, they're seeing it right before their very eyes. What do you say to parents who say, you know, I need help raising these children, 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds who will be our future leaders? What do I say to them and how do I prepare them for the inevitable? What do you say to them?
Man, I'd say for as long as they can, let them be kids.
Yeah.
America is going to teach them how America sees them.
Wow.
Trust me.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
So as long as you can, let your children be free. Let them dream. Let them explore. Let them be unhindered and unfettered by our stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes our own trauma spills over into how we parent. And, well, let me take that back. Ain't no sometimes. Sometimes.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah, yeah. Our trauma spills into how we lead the next generation and how we parent. Mm-hmm. And so because we have these distinct traumatic fears,
yeah,
we end up putting boundaries and borders on what our children can do, be, and become.
Yeah.
So I would say work really, really hard to let them be.
Yeah.
Let them enjoy freedom as much as you possibly can. Now, they can't be completely insulated, but you ought to defend ferociously their right to be children.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to do that when they get in school.
Yeah.
Because teachers and their environments are going to make demands on them and put restrictions on them. And you're going to have to valiantly fight for their right to be kids, to be free, to have dreams and to have aspirations and to do all of that.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think it's necessary that you put within them a serious, serious appreciation and confidence for their own identity.
Yeah.
Right. You got to let them know they're Black in this world.
Yeah.
Right. They don't get to operate as any other person,
right,
as in any other way.
Yeah.
They got to live in the skin that they're in. So it's this balance between pushing them to dream as much as they can dream, go as far as they can go, believe as high as they can believe. But at the same time, know that you can do it as a Black person.
Absolutely.
Know that you can do it as a Black man, as a Black woman. Know that you can do it fully embracing, fully accepting, and loving and valuing your identity.
Yeah.
The third piece I'd say is, man, I wouldn't want to navigate this world without faith.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I wouldn't want to do this.
Right.
Without God.
Yeah.
I just wouldn't want to do that. So I would say while you're balancing all of that, faith gives children this grounding and this foundational understanding that there's somebody at work bigger than me.
That's right.
Like when I've exhausted all that I can do, when I've stretched my intellect as far as it can go, when I have believed and tried and exerted energy and given my best, man, God is at work with me.
Yeah.
And where I fall short, God makes up the rest. What I don't have, God has. What I don't know, God knows.
Yeah.
What I'm not able to accomplish, God has access, resource, and agency to make accomplish. And so while I'm in my identity and while I'm dreaming, I still got this fundamental, foundational belief that God is for me. God is on my side. God is the wind at my back. God works in and through me. And with God, all things are possible.
Yeah.
I think those three, working together, have the ability to create the kind of resilient dreamers and absolute achievers that will ultimately change this world.
That's good. That's good. There are three statements that people have quoted. Hurt people hurt people.
Yes, sir. Every time.
If they don't hurt themselves first.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I would say both and.
Yeah.
I would say both and. Hurt people are going to hurt people while they hurt themselves.
That's right. Yeah, it's simultaneous even.
Yeah.
And then violence people are not born, they're bred.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even when you look at 2020, you got old racists out there.
Yeah.
You got young racists out there.
Yeah.
And now you got baby racists out there.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
These people are being groomed for this. Finally, when you consider the trauma of the African-American experience, how important is getting help? How important is counseling to assess your trauma?
Oh, my God. Listen, man. One of the best things that happened to me in 2020 was I got reengaged with my therapist.
Yeah.
I'm not telling people what I heard. I'm telling people what I know. Man, this year did it.
Yeah.
I've been involved with therapy before. I'd had a therapist before, but man, I hadn't gone probably about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this year showed me that, boy,
if you don't get
back on that couch,
yeah.
Listen,
yeah.
If you don't sit down somewhere and talk to somebody, just the weight of, again, the accumulated trauma, mm-hmm. just of being who I am in this world.
That's right.
The accumulated trauma of what has happened this year, COVID-19 and COVID-16-19.
Right.
The accumulation of all that. Plus, man, I'm a leader.
That's right.
I lead a church.
Yeah.
I lead a family. right? Mm-hmm. Elite community.
Right.
And the weight of that in this traumatic environment.
Right.
Right. All this stuff is happening. I mean, I got staff.
Yeah.
Right. I made a promise to my staff. Nobody's going to get laid off.
Yeah.
Well, guess what that means? That means that there are cuts that need to be made. They got to come from me.
Yeah.
Right. That kind of stuff. So working through this year, carrying that weight of all the stuff that was happening, man, it got very clear.
Yeah.
I need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
I need some place to unload this stuff. I need a safe place.
Yeah.
Confidential place.
That's right.
Where, you know, if I need to mentally regurgitate,
yeah.
Just throw up and get it out.
Yeah.
I can do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna pay somebody to keep it.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Right?
You know what I'm saying? I needed a space. And man, it was one of the best decisions I made in 2020.
Yeah.
To get back in regular therapy sessions, man. And I'd encourage everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody, you need a safe place.
Yeah.
You need a space. If you got yourself in a spot where you can't really work through, and if maybe you don't have yourself in a space where you can't work through, I'd encourage you, go see somebody.
Yeah.
Get that stuff out. You will never know. You can never imagine how liberating it is to be able to finally give words and language to what you feel.
Yeah.
You may not feel bad.
Right.
But to finally be able to walk into a safe space and give language to what you feel, you will feel better.
Right.
Because there is trauma that's sitting on you that's been there so long, you think it's supposed to be there.
That's right.
That there's a weight on your shoulders that's been there so long, and you're such a superhero for carrying it, that you think it's a badge of courage because you carry a lot of weight.
Right. And you're not.
You think you're supposed to be celebrating for that. I'm telling you, that ain't celebration.
No.
That's torture.
Yeah. It is.
You need to get that stuff off of you. And therapy often helps us to provide strategies, tools, tactics, and techniques to be able to kind of unload some of that stuff.
Yeah.
And dissect and interpret some of the ways in which we have internalized that trauma.
Yeah.
Man, therapy is a lifesaver.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And I'd encourage anybody, everybody, to go get some help. Now, there might be folks who say, I don't know about all that. You know, or maybe I don't know that. That's white people do that.
Right.
You've heard that before.
Oh, yeah.
White people go to counseling. White people go to therapy.
Yeah.
Listen, there are black therapists.
That's right.
That are more than willing, more than capable to walk you through some of the stuff that you go through.
Right.
And no, that's not. If you got a mind, that's not white people.
Right.
If you got a soul, that's not white stuff.
That's right.
You got real trauma, and you need to deal with that. And counseling will help you do it. For those who may argue, man, I'm not in a financial position right now to do it. I'm not in the spot where I can do it. Listen, there is therapy and counseling available on what's called a sliding scale.
That's right.
It's based upon your income, based upon what you're able to afford.
Right.
And you can pay that. If you got insurance, your insurance can cover your therapy sessions.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, if you got a job, many employers provide reimbursement for mental health resources.
Oh, yeah.
So if you need it, it's there.
It's there.
Available.
Yeah.
Don't leave it on the table.
Yeah, that's good. We got a generation of people who are suffering from the statement of what happens in this house stays in this house. So we've breeded a group of people who embrace secrecy.
Yeah.
And consequently, we're suffering for it.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It is.
What happens in this house stays in this house.
Yeah.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
It's going to be in your house. It's going to be in your children's house. This is going to be in your grandchildren's house.
Yeah.
Because what happens in this house
stays in this house.
Stays in this house.
Well, that's all the time we have for episode number 15. I want to thank my guest, Dr. John R. Faison, for his insight and contributions to today's episode. I want to challenge you to follow him on all social media platforms, and you can find his information in the show notes. If you've listened to today's episode and you realize, hey, I'm dealing with some trauma in my life and I need some help, I want to remind you of an amazing resource that I referenced in episode number one. It's a nonprofit organization founded by my sister, Keisha Dennis. It's called The Elephant in the Room Incorporated. All you have to do is go to her website, www.theelephantintheroominc.org. On this website, you'll find amazing resources that'll help you find a counselor and provide tips to help you navigate the traumas in your life. Until next time, peace.
Thanks for listening to Necessary Conversations with Daryl M. Taliaferro. Follow us on social media at Necessary Conversations Podcast. Join the conversation by leaving a message on our website, necessaryconversationspodcast.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast so you'll be notified every time a new one drops. Now, go have the conversations you need to have with the people you need to have them with.